Welcome to The Sober Effect, a show that looks at the positives of sobriety, the dangers of alcohol, and the many people who are affected by it. I'm Kate.
And I'm Steph. The ripple effect of alcohol is far-reaching, and those are the stories you'll hear on The Sober Effect. So, stress and alcohol, they seem to go hand in hand for a lot of people. A lot of people would say, I drank because I was stressed, or I like to drink at the end of a stressful day. But today, we kind of want to talk about the myth among that whole scenario of like alcohol helping your stress, because it was something that I had to find out to help me get sober, because I was using the alcohol for my anxiety, which was caused by stress. And really, what I love about this conversation is it can really help our listeners learn more about the fact that alcohol actually makes stress worse, believe it or not. That's such a hard thing to like understand, because when you physically feel the relief from drinking, but our guest today, Rory, does a really good job of explaining why that happens.
Yeah, and I wish, it's like so many things that we discuss on here, I really wish I had heard someone talk about this years ago, because like you say, I used to drink and feel this instant release, but actually it was my brain shutting down and concentrating on keeping me alive, because it was identifying the fact my body was being poisoned at a small level. Yeah. But that's what happens when you drink, and all your focus, your body's focus goes on that. And then it starts messing with your mind. It's like putting your iPhone in water. It starts to not function properly. And actually, true stress relief is done through walking, through meditating, exercise, take a bath, read a book, do arts or crafts, self-care, even decluttering for me is like my ideal stress relief. I put an audiobook on, I tackle a cupboard, and I love it. And I spend 2 or 3 hours, and I know I might sound like an ancient, boring person, but it's so nice to sit there, because you're doing something that is progressing and it's helping your life. You can see the progress you're making. It's so stress-free. You know, all you have to do is use your hands and visually take things out, organize them, separate them out. And even doing something like that and saying, right, I'm going to give myself 2 hours to do this. I'm not going to think about anything else. I'm going to put the radio on and sing, or I'm going to listen to an audiobook or a podcast. And I'm just going to empty this cupboard, and I'm not going to worry about whatever I'm worrying. And without realizing it, your shoulders will relax, your brain will switch off, and you will feel better afterwards. It's always alcohol, isn't it? The go-to, mm-hmm. The quick fix. But that stuff, it might be a quick fix, but it's like putting chewing gum on a broken bicycle tire.
Yeah.
You're going to end up going downhill and it's going to come off, and then right. You're going to be in real trouble. It's just not worth it. And it causes so much more stress that you then have to deal with sober, or you drink again, mm-hmm. which is what we did. We just made it worse. And when you actually are honest about it and you step back, and as you say, when you hear Rory explain it, and I love the way he compared it to a kind of credit card, I think that was brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
When you listen to that, you kind of go, it just makes sense. And I imagine everyone listening will be able to relate to this and say, yeah, absolutely, that happened to me.
Rory and I have kind of a similar story, and we kind of get into it in the discussion. But for anyone who maybe tries to do these things, but wants to keep alcohol in their life, right? Like me, I never wanted to give up alcohol. I was holding on to it, but I was doing the meditating and I was trying to find, you know, exercising and yoga and doing all those things. And then I would say, well, they don't work. They're not working. And I would just continue on with the alcohol. And I think it's important, if you really want to see if these things work, you have to take that depressant, because let's just call alcohol out right now. It's a depressant. Like, yeah. You have to take that out of the equation and give yourself the space to let these things work, you know, start figuring out what works for you. I love what you were just saying about cleaning out a cupboard or a cabinet, because it's springtime. And I've been doing a lot of that lately. And there is something, it's the dopamine, right? We need that hit. We need to feel like we've accomplished something. And alcohol gives us that. We've learned that through other podcasts. Like, it gives us that. But what's great about that hit is we didn't even have to do anything to get it, right? But then there's that horrible feeling that follows it. I mean, I have been in such a good mood the last few days, and I've really been like, why, you know? And then you bring that up and I'm like, it's probably because I'm cleaning out my house. And I'm in, I guess what you would call, when you're talking about that, like putting on an audiobook or a podcast or music, you get into what is called like a flow state. And that is like what all of us humans want. I'm reading this book that you actually recommended, Kate. Like
Stolen Focus.
Yeah, it's Stolen Focus. And that's something that they're talking about in this book is, as humans, like when we could get into a flow state, it is so good for our brains. It just like ignites all the little chemicals that feel good and everything falls silent and quiet, which is what were we doing with alcohol? That's exactly what we were looking for with alcohol, yeah. Right? So if we can find things that get us into that flow state, whether it's sitting and doing a puzzle or, you know, working out, you got to start experimenting with these things. But like I said, it's so important to do it without alcohol. Take a long break and just have fun and try to find what gets you into that flow state. And I promise you, you will not want to go back to alcohol. I feel like once I found all that in my life, like I don't want to go back to alcohol.
And you used to do all these things, but you also then used to take loads of vitamins, didn't you? I remember you telling me, you were kind of going, I was taking all these things. And then you found out that alcohol, we had the nutritionist on.
Yeah.
And she was saying, oh no, none of those work. If you're drinking, they just go right through you. And then you were taking like hangover kind of remedies and stuff. Why do we do it? Like,
oh, man.
You cannot be a healthy person. Even if you go to the gym every day and you do yoga every morning and you eat berries and yogurts and all the healthy things, if you drink alcohol, you are still putting that stuff in your body.
Yep.
It's not healthy. There is no place for alcohol in a stress-free, healthy life. And that's the end of the sentence. There's no comma. There's no ifs or buts or unless. It's just, that's the fact, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Should we hear from Rory?
Let's go meet him.
So I stopped drinking 6 years ago. Since then, I've been helping other people do the same. And my angle is that I'm a meditation teacher. So I teach people how to remove stress from their lives. And how that relates to my story is that what I found when I learned to meditate, which wasn't to quit drinking, is that I naturally had far fewer triggers or reasons to drink. And I kind of retrospectively, in hindsight, realized that I'd been much more stressed than I thought I was. I've been self-medicating for stress. And I had this idea that maybe it was my stiff English upper lip. This is the thing. People think stress is good. And people get even addicted to stress. To go back a step, stress is a physiological response to demands in the environment, which we perceive as dangers. And they could be physical dangers, like it could be a saber-toothed tiger running down the road at you. Because we don't live on the tundra, is more likely to be an ambiguous email from your boss or your partner not texting you back in time. So they're more like social dangers, but we react as if they were physical dangers. And that sends our body into a certain reaction. It puts adrenaline in our system so we could run away. It puts cortisol in our system so that we're more alert. And these are like drugs, right? Adrenaline is a natural hormone. And there's the phrase adrenaline junkies. People get addicted to this stuff. And it is useful in certain contexts. And it can help you get stuff done. Like cortisol, I like to relate it to caffeine. Like it will give you a bit of a buzz and it'll help you get stuff done. But it's not a sustainable way of living, because when we're in that stress response, we shut down many of our non-essential systems, like our digestive system, our immune system. And guess what? If we don't have our immune system working, we get sick more often. Our reproductive system, that's non-essential as well. So what many people do, and what I did and didn't realize I was doing through this self-medicating, was this kind of getting myself high on cortisol and then bringing myself down with alcohol, because we all know that alcohol numbs us. So if I was feeling stressed, or, you know, if I was feeling stressed through cortisol or experiencing any of the emotions related to stress. So if you think about the fight flight response that everyone talks about, the emotion behind fight is anger. And the emotion behind flight is anxiety or fear. And I was this kind of pretending to be all blokey going, well, oh, no, I don't have that. Because I wasn't outwardly stressed, as in I wouldn't have picked a fight with anyone in the pub. I was seething about people all the time. I'd be secretly really angry with you, but I'd just be smiling. You wouldn't ever know.
That's scary stuff.
That's the worst kind, right? That's bottled up anger. So because I wasn't outwardly, like I didn't have the outward symptoms of stress, I didn't think I had it, but I was often angry and short-tempered, or I would sulk. Like that's not flight as in I'm running away, but I would internally withdraw, you know, like a little spoiled little brat hiding in my head. So I think, and this is what my work is about, is saying, well, look, if we remove stress as a factor in your drinking, we're at least going to get rid of some of the crappy midweek kind of drinking, and then we can tackle the, oh, but it's fun, or, you know, all those other limiting beliefs later. But the first step is let's get rid of this crappy stuff, which you don't even like, you know, the stuff that people want to get rid of straight away, that it's 5 o'clock, you know, wine mom type thing, or end of the busy work day, work drinks, the coping mechanism drink. So my thing is saying, right, if we sort the stress levels in your body out, you don't have to do any of the thinking around it. It's just changing your physiology so that you're going to be less needy. And then we can sort this, the other stuff out later. And that was my experience. I was like, week one of learning to meditate, which was in 2014, I suddenly just felt less needy, right? Needy for a drink, needy for social conforming. Like I was always a people pleaser. So if anyone said, hey, let's go for drinks on Wednesday, and I was thinking, I've got a big presentation tomorrow, I shouldn't. I'd just be saying, yes, okay. And drink two? Yeah, sure. But then I never had much of an off switch. I'd still be going at 2 a.m. in the casino with a load of randoms. So even in the first week of learning to meditate, and not just learning it, but significantly doing it every day, I just found that fall away. Because drinking to manage stress is like it works, right? In a very short, quick fix, filthy, dirty way, it works. In a similar way to if you've got financial problems, getting another credit card works, right? Or going and visiting the loan shark works. But, you know, if you don't care for your kneecaps, then continue with that thing. But, you know, if it didn't work, people wouldn't have done it, right? But it does work. It's just they're not thinking of this wider context. And you can read about how chronic drinking increases cortisol levels in the body, and it, you know, spikes the adrenal glands and all that. But if people haven't thought about it in the context of why am I using it here? Because we've been programmed by so many messages and the 8 billion that the alcohol industry spend, that we just go, okay, this is good. Everyone on TV is doing it. All my friends are doing it. It works. They're not then putting two and two together to think, well, hang on, this is now creating an addictive cycle where alcohol withdrawal, even if it's a couple of drinks, then increases cortisol. And it's, you know, the addictive cycle that we would recognize, you know, in more serious hard drugs, but less so in drinking. But it's there, you know, it's creating that little itch that makes you walk to the fridge.
It's the merry-go-round, I would call it, because I had really bad anxiety, which is why I drank. I was a people pleaser. Like so many things that you said resonated with me, because it was a lot of the reasons I drank. I was a people pleaser and I would get irritable really easy, but I always wanted everyone to think I was okay. So we've talked about it before. Some people, when they drink, like this whole another side comes out where they are angered, like you're talking about, like they get in fights or they're more vocal about things. It was the opposite for me. I actually used alcohol to kind of calm that down so that I wouldn't go there. And I know that's like some people are really listening to that and they're like, how? But like, that's how it worked for me. But then the cortisol and all that, I had the horrible rebound of anxiety attacks the next day because my body's trying to come back. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that for people who maybe suffer with anxiety and think that alcohol is what's helping that stress factor?
Well, yeah, but I just wanted to quickly pick up what you were saying, because I was reading on your Instagram that you're paused from, but I was reading on it you were saying that the anxiety attacks, but also you mentioned the fact that you're an introvert.
Yes.
And I think that plays into it, because I'm an introvert, and that's us being angry in our heads and kind of masking it, that bottling up thing, whereas the people punching people in the face in the pub, they're the extrovert. So anxiety, you know, it makes us feel anxious. It's an emotion or a feeling that we want to avoid. So this is like we were saying about the credit card being a way of managing debt. Alcohol numbs you. It numbs that. So it does, in very inverted commas, work But that what it does is that then makes things worse because it spikes everything. Like it spikes your dopamine levels and it spikes your serotonin, and then you're depleted of all those things. And serotonin's like the feel good hormone. So if you don't have that, you're then feeling worse. So it's this really bad cycle of, you know, similar to many other destructive cycles like comfort eating, you know, anything like that, that kind of spikes those pleasure centers. And you're just going to feel worse. Like if you get another credit card, I quite like this financial analogy because it's less related to eating and drinking. But everyone gets that if you get another credit card and it's got another 20% interest and you don't pay it off, it's going to keep going. Or if you go to the loan shark, who's 100% interest a week, like it's not smart. Part of that is education, but then part of it, I think, is saying, well, look, you're using this as a wellness strategy. It's a crap one.
What I have found so interesting is all the habits that come with drinking and the damage you also do to other parts of your body. So you use drinking to try and overcome problems or issues or uncomfortable situations, but alcohol starts to damage so many other parts of your body. You also then start eating junk food at night. You start getting less sleep because you binge watch Netflix till 2 a.m. Every time you have a drink, you have a cigarette. It then negatively impacts all these other aspects of your life. And I have been amazed at how my daily routine, which has nothing to do with alcohol because I was not a day drinker, but the choices I now make during the day are so different because I don't drink in the evening. And the mental clarity I have is just one aspect of it. Because when you stop drinking, you realize that the drinking to overcome certain stresses was actually the reason you had so many more stresses and so much more anxiety to deal with. And it's like you said, Steph, it's like a roundabout. It doesn't help with anything. And actually, it creates more crap that you have to deal with, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Like I call meditation a cornerstone habit, as like yoga could be or exercise could be. It's like alcohol is like the opposite cornerstone, the cornerstone of other bad habits like bad eating, like not exercising. Like, yeah, as a 20-year smoker, 18 years of that, I only smoked when I was drinking, but I could still smoke several packs a week. But I would never even consider doing it sober, right, when I wasn't drinking. But one of the ways that it plays into that is that, yeah, one of alcohol's things is it shuts down, as does stress, in fact, shuts down your prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain which is in charge. Like, you can think of it as the CEO of your brain. It's the higher thinking functions, decision making, forward planning, empathy, creativity, which you don't need in a stress situation, for example, which is why stress shuts it down, but also alcohol shuts it down, which is why you find yourself with all these good intentions going, I'm just going to go out and I'm going to have 2 drinks or 3 drinks. And it's like, well, guess what? It's that second drink which shuts down your decision-making part of your brain, which then makes it really hard to make that decision because it's not you. It's not the Kate that writes her New Year's resolutions in her journal. It's, you know, whatever your alter ego, crazy Kate, who's first on the dance floor. And that's why moderation's so hard, because so when if people are thinking of moderating, and I always kind of caution against it, but I say if you're going to moderate, you can only really have like the drink drive limit, because otherwise it shuts down, you know, that part of you with the good intentions is not there. If you're going to stick to the drink driving limit, I'm kind of like, well, why bother? I would often say no to lunchtime drinks unless it was an all day session, because I'd have 2 at lunch and I would just feel so tired afterwards, and I'd be like, this is bad, and never putting 2 and 2 together to say, well, this is just bad.
Yeah.
I was just like, no, daytime drinking when you stop is bad, i.e. just push on through, don't go back to work.
I totally agree. Like, I did a lot of day drinking, but it was always to get drunk. Towards the end, day drinking was convenient because I got rid of my anxiety earlier in the day. And then my whole thought process was, well, then I'll go to bed at like 8 o'clock. And then I'll have more time to sleep it off, and then I won't feel as bad. That was really my whole thought process at the point of where I was really self-medicating with alcohol. I mean, looking back, that's exactly what I was doing. It was very planned around when my anxiety would start kicking in, you know, and my anxiety felt like an adrenaline rush, which later on, when I found out that the alcohol was causing the anxiety, it made total sense. And the whole reason I figured it out is because I remember reading that when you're coming down from alcohol, your body will sometimes get like a boost of adrenaline to try to get back to homeostasis. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I like physically am feeling. And it was like a light bulb moment, which comes around to, I wrote down education. I think these conversations are so important because I had no idea. I had zero idea that alcohol could be causing my anxiety. It was the last thing. I tried everything else to get better, but quitting alcohol. Because the narrative everywhere, right? Drink it when you're stressed, drink it when you're anxious, drink it when you're happy, drink it when you're sad. I thought it was helping me.
Well, yeah, and with sleep as well. It's such a common thing that people use for sleep. And this is like the bad credit card thing is it inverted commas works, i.e. it will help you fall asleep, but it gives you a terrible night's sleep. It does the 1 a.m. Rebound effect where it wakes you up. This, I was reading this study the other day where it's saying it robs you of something like 3/4 of your REM sleep. So you're dreaming sleep. And guess what? REM sleep is how we manage stress. And if we're not having that, it's like it's like this worst, it's pouring fuel on the fire kind of thing. It's not just ineffective, it's making it significantly worse. But without a different coping mechanism like you, Steph, you're just thinking, well, I'm holding on to this because I haven't got anything else to do. Or like I had a client who's a meditation student. She wasn't a big drinker, but she was addicted to sleeping pills, and she'd been on sleeping pills for 25 years. She was in her 70s. And she was just like, I know this is bad, but I haven't got anything else to do. So we were like, well, we'll get you meditating. And then in consultation with her doctor, over 2 weeks, she weaned herself off. And now she doesn't need them anymore. And guess what? She sleeps way better than ever before. But because, you know, every ad break in every TV show and in every movie, they're all drinking, you have to make a bit of an effort to get out of that narrative. And that's what I love about this kind of sobriety scene, alcohol-free scene, which has changed quite a lot, even in the 6 years since I stopped drinking. It's becoming much, much more normal.
Before we go on to talk about some of the alternative coping mechanisms, do you have some of the kind of risk factors or the warning signs that people who might be listening should be looking out for? Like you've just said, Steph, you had no idea that you were using it for that and it was making it worse. Are there some warning signs that people should look out for if you are drinking and not necessarily drinking every night and getting absolutely hammered 3 or 4 times a week? But what kind of associations are there that might indicate that stopping alcohol is going to massively relieve some of the stresses in your life?
Before this, I was just refreshing my memory on kind of official definitions of what constitutes stress. And it is things like we were saying, like what I'm reading here, classic symptoms of stress include being irritable, angry, impatient, wound up, overwhelmed, anxious, nervous, afraid, feel like your thoughts are racing. I often talk about overthinkers or people being plagued by too much thinking, difficulty sleeping, drinking too much was one of the ones. There are obviously physical things as well, like high blood pressure, etc. I think those ones, I picked them out because these are the ones, because we're introverts. Like none of my friends would have said, Rory is irritable, he's angry. You know, they wouldn't have said those things because I'm just like poker face. I'll storm off and you won't even know because I've been very polite about it. And made some excuse, but I'll be like,
so you won't storm off, you'll tiptoe off.
Well, yeah. So it's like, it's thinking about, but this is the other issue with it is it's like that frog in a boiling pot of water thing, which apparently isn't true, but I like it as a metaphor. The frogs just jump out. They've scientists have proved it. But this idea that because it's so slow, for me anyway, it was such a slow increase, you just normalize it. So it's not like you wake up one day and go, oh, I am irritable and angry. It's just like, well, that's what I am. It might change a 0.5% a day or, you know, whatever other factors come into it. But it's such a slow burn that you kind of don't notice it, which is interestingly why I only noticed when I started meditating. And I started meditating just because I was in this midlife crisis and I was in like a juncture in my career where I wanted to change careers. I was a journalist and I wanted to move into web development. And I was doing it for clarity. And it was like discovering penicillin by mistake. I was like, oh, wow, I was stressed and that was causing me to drink. Like I didn't put those two things together.
Most people, they'll get sober and then they find like spirituality and things like that. Well, I went on like a spiritual journey while I was drinking. There was some meditating along with the spiritual side of that. I feel like it did open my eyes to alcohol in a sense, because with spirituality, you learn very quickly that vibrational wise, the alcohol doesn't help at all. Like it keeps you at a very low vibration. And so I would notice when I could take long breaks, I felt more connected spiritually. And my meditations were easier because I didn't have the anxiety and the anxious thoughts and all of those things. It is a slow burn, I agree. But I think if you are even listening to this podcast, you're already having a little bit of an awareness. Or if someone sent you this podcast to listen to, that might be a hint too. But it's kind of like if you notice every time anything comes up that bothers you or comes up as an itch, you want to scratch it with alcohol. So if you're noticing like you're having a hard day and your first thought is, I cannot wait to get out of here and open a bottle of wine and just kick my shoes off. Like these are the thoughts that you have to start being aware of. And for me, I mean, that's what I started noticing. I was doing that a lot. But yeah, it's really hard when you're caught up in it, though. I can say it was really hard when I was caught up in it because I was just so desperate to not feel the way I was feeling.
And it's interesting what you said about finding the spiritual thing first, which is very much what I did. And it's interestingly, not that I've done 12 steps, but I've read around it quite a lot. Like meditation is step 11, meditation and prayer, but they're all sequential steps. So people might not get to step 11 for a year, 2 years, because they have to do all like the chunky ones are like the moral inventory and the apologies and making amends and stuff. And I'm like, well, look, just get the meditation at the beginning. Forget the prayer stuff, get the meditation at the beginning. And then you're basically saying that you don't have to like think your way out of this thinking problem. There's a famous Einstein quote, which I'm going to murder, which is like something like you can't solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created the problem, which is basically you can't think yourself out of this thinking problem. So whatever it is, and it might be, you know, rock climbing, or it might be some kind of creativity, finding a way to cope with your life. And if, like you said, Steph, if you're finding that everything is triggering, then that is a signal that there's probably stress in there, because when we've got cortisol, we're programmed to look out for dangers. It's a survival mechanism. And it's like, well, this thing, which could be a car coming to run me over, but could be the ambiguous email, or it could be the, you know, looking foolish. If you're being triggered a lot by that and feeling anxious or angry, being the other one, fight or flight, then that's a good signal. But the other thing is, it's something like, I read this stat yesterday, 75 to 90% of visits to the doctor are to do with a stress-related condition. So unless you're the one in 10 people that it's not, you've got stress, you know, and it's you may be enjoying it because you're a kind of stress junkie, or you're just kind of putting up with it because it's been normalized, but it's a pretty safe bet that you're carrying around some stress that you could do without. And this is the other thing. I'm like, sort that out first, and then you can worry about whether you're going to drink at your sister's wedding or on holiday at a later point. But we want to get rid of the rubbish coping stuff, because that's what's making you feel bad each day and perpetuate that cycle.
Well, I didn't think I was stressed. I would never have called myself stressed. I would have said I was happy, easygoing. I never had anxiety. I was incredibly confident. I never drank because I felt awkward in social situations. I drank because I liked to get drunk. But since giving up alcohol, I have realized how much lighter everything feels. I have realized how much calmer I am, how much more interested I am in things, how much more I like myself and I respect myself, how much shame I was carrying around. And actually, I didn't realize all of those things were stressors, because I had been doing it since I was 14. It's just who I was. So even if you don't think you're stressed, as you say, give it a go, because what have you got to lose? In my case, actually, I had a lot to lose, because as you say, with the frog in the boiling pan, it had been going on my whole adult life. I had never been an adult who didn't drink. I knew no different. And it is such a strange feeling to be a sober adult and actually experience things and feelings and know that none of them are related to the high I got from alcohol, or the lows that I got from recovering from alcohol, or the need for more alcohol. Once you strip all of that away and it's just you, you become really interested in who you are, and you notice your feelings, and you think, because all feelings are important, all emotions are important, and you get fight or flight for a reason. But if it's not a reason that's brought about because of alcohol, you know it's something you need to take attention of and do something about. Whereas before, 98% of my problems were because of alcohol. They were self-inflicted. So even if you think you are the most chill person and the alcohol is not affecting you mentally, that was me. And I promise you the difference will be huge. If you drink regularly, anyone who drinks regularly who stops, you will see a difference in the way you are. You just might not realize it.
Yeah, and I love that thing about this kind of self-inflicted mental health issues is what it was for me. Like hangovers, like the 98 of the top 100 times I felt awful were hangovers. The other two would have been when I had dengue fever. And this was like every week, twice a week. I remember sitting through whole days at work, which would be, you know, when you like you've been out drinking till like 4 in the morning and you go into work and it's like looking at your watch and it's like it's 9:05. I've got so long to go. And then it's like, it's 9:07. No.
I've been home from work, actually, because they're like, you're still drunk. Two of us who had gone out and they just said, just go home. It's embarrassing.
I actually had so my surname's Kinsella. So there was a term that was coined in our office, which was to be Kinsellered. And that meant to be so hungover that you were still visibly drunk.
I think people get scared about giving up alcohol, don't they? And it's the opposite. I think this is like freedom. I don't know if you agree, but I was very nervous about giving up alcohol. And I thought my life would change for the worse because I would just not have anything to do socially. I was losing the one thing I enjoyed doing every night. I didn't know anything else. And I just thought, well, I've got to try and do it because it's clearly making me sad. It's making me not like myself, which is different to stress. But I was waking up disappointed with myself every day. The difference between who we are today and who we were when we were drinkers, I'm sure everyone who knows us would be able to tell that we're much happier and we look better and we're healthier.
I've got a client who her favorite phrase that she reminds herself of whenever she's thinking, oh, maybe alcohol's the right decision for how I'm feeling right now. She says, no, it's liquid depressant, right? It is a nervous system depressant, which is why it works for helping you feel less stressed in the moment, but is also why you feel sad and you feel depressed, you know, after. The next day specifically, as we were saying, hangovers being like one of the worst things you can do to yourself. This is the other thing I say to people, look, because they'll be freaking out going, I don't know if I can give up forever. And it's like, never use forever, right? Never say forever. I haven't had a drink for 6 years and I haven't said forever because it's not useful because you say forever and then you're having to think through every Christmas, every birthday, people's weddings, like kids' weddings, grandkids' weddings. And that's too much. So all you say is right, but give it a go and first of all, sort out your coping mechanisms. But then when it's week 2, week 3, start getting out and doing social stuff. Because if we isolate ourselves, which it's my tendency to do as an introvert, then we kind of perpetuate this idea that not drinking is not fun because you're not doing anything. But it does take a bit of creativity. So one, just back yourself, get out of your comfort zone and do it. But then two, just think, look, it's going to be good. It's something to look forward to. You're going to thank yourself for it. You don't have to commit to forever. You're just running an experiment to be like, hey, I've run the experiment of drinking and it's not worked out. If you're here, if you're listening to this, it's not worked out in some way. You just try the other way and see how you like it. And if you don't like it, you can go back. It's fine.
Thanks for tuning in. We're just two women from opposite sides of the pond striving to shed light on the negative impacts of alcohol. Quick heads up, we're not licensed therapists or doctors. If alcohol is seriously affecting your mental or physical health, seek professional help.
And don't forget to hit that follow button to catch all of our future episodes. If you think our podcast could make a difference to someone you know, share the love. And hey, leaving a 5-star review will really help the Sober Effect reach more fantastic people like you. So thank you.